it's strongly in our interest to continue to support the Ukrainians to restore their territorial integrity.
Senator Dan Sullivan says the U.S. isn't sending weapons to Ukraine fast enough. For Alaska Public Media, this is Liz Ruskin on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 27th. Good evening. I'm Liz Ruskin. Also tonight, the Anchorage Assembly considers offering parental leave to city employees.
We should look at the 4 weeks policy as sort of the minimum, and it's not like we're doing something really groundbreaking here.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's three universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan says the Biden administration should better arm Ukraine in its struggle to end the Russian invasion of that country.
Now that we are in this battle, it's strongly in our interest to continue to support the Ukrainians to restore their territorial integrity and their sovereignty without committing U.S. forces.
Sullivan spoke yesterday on NBC's Meet the Press. His position puts him at odds with leading figures in the Republican Party, notably former President Donald Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who are both campaigning for president. Sullivan criticized the Biden administration for not sending weapons fast enough.
That has been a pattern with this administration from the beginning, where they have slow-rolled critical military weapons systems. You know, it's a long list. It's Patriots, yeah. It's HIMARS, it's tanks, and now it's F-16s. And to me, that is a real blunder. We need to get them what they need now and listen to the Ukrainians.
Sullivan says there has always been an isolationist wing of the GOP, but he says a strong contingent of Republicans on the Senate Armed Services, Intelligence, and Foreign Affairs committees still support helping Ukraine's military. A recent study found that two-thirds of the world's glaciers could disappear by the end of this century. That may sound pretty far into the future, but in Alaska, one of the most glaciated places in the world, those frozen landmarks are a strong attraction for the state's thriving tourism industry. And as Alaska Public Media's Michael Finelli reports, for at least one glacier-focused company, the end is already in sight.
Around the two-minute mark of their promotional video, Exit Glacier Guides founder Brendan Ryan can be seen walking effortlessly from dry land onto a vast expanse of ice.
We stepped out onto the glacier and instantly we knew that this was something that people would never be able to see again and probably had never seen before.
That video was filmed in 2008, and Ryan says in the years since, Exit Glacier has become much more complicated to access.
Rather than it being a gentle step up, it's literally a sheer wall of ice because it's melted so far back from the sides of the cliffs where it used to be butted up against.
These days, Ryan says they often have to cut stairs into the ice to get up onto the glacier, and those stairs usually melt away by the next day. They've also had to lengthen their tour times and implement a number of safety measures.
The difference from the glacier over the past decade is mind-boggling. It's a completely different topography out there than it was, even really 6 years ago.
In January, a study published in the journal Science found that glaciers around the world are melting faster than anticipated, and at the current rate of global warming, two-thirds could disappear this century. That would have drastic consequences for sea level rise and for the billions of people who rely on that runoff for everything from drinking water to irrigation. In Alaska, the impacts are not as dire, but they're happening now.
I like to say that in Alaska, the glaciers are not ornaments on the mountains. To a large extent, they are the mountains.
National Park Service glaciologist Mike Loso says that glaciers are an iconic part of the state and are an integral part of many Alaskans' lives.
Many people in Alaska have had the experience of walking on glaciers, skiing on glaciers, snow machining on glaciers. They're a regular part of our lives in a lot of ways, at least for many of us. And that's changing. And it's going to change even more. Our landscape as we know it is really being changed wholesale.
Because they're so large, most of Alaska's glaciers won't go extinct anytime soon, he says. They'll just shrink out of the views we've become accustomed to. Loso says that many of our tourism patterns are oriented around where glaciers are now. Exit Glacier and the Kenai Fjords are popular because they're easy to get to from the road system.
And so they're hotspots for tourism, and we have businesses and communities that have developed around those hotspots. And some of those hotspots are not going to be any good for viewing glaciers in 100 years or even in 50.
Just how fast and how far the glaciers will retreat is unclear, because the degree of change depends on how much more we heat the planet. Loso says this new study illustrates that we can substantially reduce the amount of glacial loss if we reduce greenhouse gas emissions.
The glaciers of the future are going to be responsive to the choices we as a society make. And so though some additional loss of glacier mass is inevitable, the magnitude of that loss is in our hands.
Loso says the National Park Service is now partnering with the authors of the January study to focus research more closely on the specifics of Alaska glaciers. In the meantime, tourists will continue flocking to hotspot communities like Seward, where the harbor comes alive every summer with tens of thousands of people eager to see the glaciers and wildlife of Kenai Fjords National Park. Kirsten McNeil is the marketing manager for Major Marine Tours. She says the company hasn't started planning for a future without tidewater glaciers, but viewing them is a vital part of their business.
We would have to change our entire operation as far as where we go, the routes we take, what we're telling passengers we see. You know, I believe it would happen gradually over time, but it would definitely make us change our operations and what we're promising that passengers will see.
For businesses like Exit Glacier Guides and founder Brendan Ryan, though, the timeline is much shorter.
Eventually, it'll mean that we don't run our operations at all at Exit Glacier. And each year, we think that's an inevitability within the next couple of years.
Ryan says his mindset at this point is to not look too far into the future. He's just trying to eke out one more season. In Anchorage, I'm Michael Finelli.
The U.S. Army is proposing to replace Fort Wainwright's coal-fired heat and power plant with natural gas-fired boilers installed around the post. The Army must replace the 65-year-old power plant because it's unreliable and becoming too expensive to operate. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Army officials announced their proposed choice in a final environmental impact statement made public on February 10th. They considered building a $687 million replacement coal plant and a $363 million facility that would run on either diesel or natural gas. But they opted instead for the $117 million distributed natural gas-fired boilers alternative.
The U.S. Army Garrison Alaska has identified that third alternative as the preferred alternative.
Fort Wainwright Directorate of Public Works Operations and Maintenance Division Chief Jennifer Meyer says the Army can't yet say much about the natural gas system or the time frame in which it'll be built, but she says it'll likely take a while.
Pretty much any Army construction project takes us several years to start to finish.
The post's old heat and power plant has been in service 30 years beyond its average design life, and it's become one of the Army's most expensive to operate. Post officials say it's broken down four times in recent years, and on one cold winter day in 2018, it was offline for several hours.
The Army mission here is at some risk with a single source of heat that is that old.
Former Fort Wainwright Utilities Privatization and Maintenance Division Chief Stephen Stringham said in 2019 that the breakdowns and fires at the plant convinced post officials that the facility and much of its steam heat distribution lines needed to be replaced. Their decision to convert to natural gas-fired heat will require a large volume of LNG to fuel it, and the Fairbanks-based Interior Gas Utility is interested in filling that demand.
We are very excited to work with the Army in any capacity that might be needed.
IGU spokesperson Elena Suddeth says the utility should be well positioned to supply the post due to a recently reached deal with Hillcorp Alaska and subsidiary Harvest to build a North Slope gas processing plant and truck the LNG that it produces there to Fairbanks.
The initial facility is going to be 150,000 gallons a day, and IGU needs about half of that to begin with. So just the initial facility alone is going to have plenty of natural gas for Fort Wainwright.
The natural gas boilers would generate heat but not electricity under the current proposal, so Fort Wainwright would have to buy more power from Golden Valley Electric Association to replace the 20 megawatts that the coal plant can produce. GVEA spokesperson Meadow Bailey says that would be in addition to the power the utility already provides to the post.
Fort Wainwright is one of our larger customers.
Bailey says if the Army seeks a new power sales agreement, Golden Valley officials would work to ensure it benefits all utility customers.
We are, of course, a member-owned utility, and so we exist to meet the needs of all of our members, residents and business, and this, of course, includes military installations.
Meyer says Army officials will begin working on details like power purchases and LNG supply contracts after their decision to build the new facility is made final on March 13th. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a unique fundraising model for a Kenai Community Theater Group.
The things that sell best are casual. In anything that you could wear on a hike.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents go to great lengths to protect their little ones. When it comes to protection from childhood diseases, go with the safest, most effective choice. Start strong by getting all recommended vaccines for your baby by age 2. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. That's vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The Anchorage Assembly is considering a proposal to allow parental leave for executive and non-union city employees. It's similar to a policy that was rescinded by Mayor Dave Bronson shortly after he took office. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
The new parental leave policy is proposed by Assemblymembers Austin Quinn-Davidson, Meg Zalatel, and Suzanne LaFrance. It's the second time in less than 2 years that Quinn-Davidson has attempted to secure paid parental leave for city workers.
It provides this opportunity to not only, you know, benefit the family and the infants and moms and dads, but to give the employer an opportunity to say, yeah, you go spend 4 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever it is with your family. We know that's important, but it also means that person's going to come back to work.
The policy mirrors one that was put in place by Quinn-Davidson on June 30th, 2021, her last day as acting mayor. Soon after, Mayor Dave Bronson took office and he got rid of it. Like the old policy, Quinn-Davidson says the new one allows for up to 4 weeks of paid parental leave.
And that's following the birth of a child, adoption. So if you were to adopt, you still need that bonding time with your kid as well, and also foster placement.
Quinn-Davidson says the benefits of a parental leave program include allowing parents to spend more time bonding with newborns, as well as reducing rates of infant mortality and hospitalizations. In a time when child care options have become expensive and scarce in Anchorage, she says it helps retain employees and prevent the costly training of new hires. Quinn-Davidson also says the 4 paid weeks off being offered to new parents isn't a lot. The federal government offers 12 weeks, and many private sector jobs are beginning to offer paid parental leave as well.
We should look at the 4 weeks policy as sort of the minimum, and it's not like we're doing something really groundbreaking here.
When Bronson rescinded paid parental leave, he said it was because it was hastily adopted. In a written statement, he added, quote, "It came with virtually no data, information, or even a basic understanding for how it would impact the municipality's budget or financial outlook," end quote. Quinn-Davidson disagrees.
I have to laugh when the mayor has described it repeatedly as rushed because, you know, it it took at least a year to get it going.
It's unclear where Bronson stands on the new proposal. In recent public remarks, he didn't make a firm commitment in favor or in opposition. On the one hand, in his report to the Assembly last week, Bronson described the policy as a means to incentivize hiring of city employees.
We know that the MOA cannot compete against wages in the private sector, so perhaps a policy like this is warranted, especially for families looking to grow.
However, in the same report, Bronson expressed concern over how the policy could impact existing employees.
I do think it is important, though, to consider this policy through the view of equity. When considering the idea of providing one class of employees a set of benefits that another class does not have, we must weigh how that impacts both morale and staffing.
Officials with the mayor's office did not respond to questions about the parental leave policy or which class of employees he was referring to in his remarks. Quinn Davidson says she suspects Bronson was referring to employees with children versus those without. She says she understands that perspective, but she thinks that the benefits to the community as a whole outweigh any concerns over fairness.
Before I knew better, I might have agreed with him, but I think just a little bit of reading and thinking about society in a broader way and long-term investment would cure him of that perception.
The Assembly will vote on the parental leave policy during its meeting on March 7th. Right now, the policy excludes union-represented employees, since changes to their workforce policy would be subject to collective bargaining and contract negotiations between the city and unions. Quinn Davidson says she's hopeful that if the Assembly approves parental leave, the city would later add the policy to union-represented employee benefits, too. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Alaska nonprofits have some unique fundraising tools at their disposal, like Pick, Click, Give, and Pull Tab stores. A community theater group in Kenai is raising money through clothes. Curtain call consignment has been a big source of revenue for the Kenai performers since 2009. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has the story.
Store manager Tana Butler says the idea came from two board members at one of the group's annual meetings. They said, why not give it a go?
And it did. It went. It was just a go from the beginning.
Butler has been at Curtain Call since the start. She says she gets all of her clothes there. Today she's wearing a red sweater with pink hearts and jeans she got from the store. And the Kenai Performers runs in her family. Her mom played in the orchestra when she was a kid. Her daughter Celia has been in shows for years and has worked at the store too. Butler didn't go to school for retail or fashion. Her background is in nursing, but she says she and the other volunteers have learned the ropes along the way, how to price clothes and to know what's going to sell.
The things that sell best are casual. So jeans, in anything that you could wear on a hike. Or
professional wear, not as much.
If we had to get smaller, the blazer rack would go first.
Here's how it works. Consigners bring clothes and accessories into the store when they no longer have a need for them. Curtain Call decides if they want the clothes or if they don't. The ones they do, they put out onto the racks, and they're priced lower than they would be if they were new.
When the thing sells, an item sells, it is 50% to them, the consigner, and 50% to us. And then we just try to do it as cost efficiently as possible, and then it just goes into Kenai Performers' coffers, and we get to do things like buy scripts and buildings and lights and props and chairs. And
all those other costs that go into running and growing a theater. The Kenai Performers bought a space in 2021 that today houses its Black Box Theater. Another learning curve for Butler and the other volunteers has been figuring out which donations to take. They don't just take anything. Butler estimates they accept about half of what comes in.
We try to take things that are either have been purchased probably in the last 3 years, or really vintage, or quirky, or super fun, or really loud, or sassy, or sparkly.
And they keep things about 90 days. The clothes that don't sell get donated elsewhere. Today, Curtain Call is housed in the Seaman Building on Frontage Road in Kenai. It's the boutique's third storefront. One Kenai location shuttered a decade ago after a driver drove his car into the front of the store. One constant has been the support the store has been to the nonprofit, especially in its leaner years. At times, it's the number one source of revenue for Kenai performers. And it's come in handy in times when the theater couldn't make as much money through other methods like ticket sales or summer drama camps, like during COVID when it wasn't putting on any in-person events.
It has been very good in that it's just like a consistent background source. And the community just very much supports it. And it's, especially when we started, there were very few clothing stores beside Fred Meyer even in town. So it was even kind of the one of the very few places to do that.
And but then, Butler says it's still going strong, even in the age of online shopping. She says consigners will often bring things into the store instead of sending them back to retailers like Amazon and Poshmark.
Our community, of course, you have to order a lot of things, and then it gets here, and then it didn't vent. So that happens a lot. We benefit from it being expensive to ship things back.
And she says not only does that mean more money for the store, it's also a better alternative to things ending up in the trash. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Matson, delivering the goods and materials Alaskans depend on. On Facebook at Matson in Alaska. Matson, supporting public media in Alaska. Grant applications are now being accepted for tribal justice grants through the U.S. Department of Justice. Coordinated Tribal Assistance Solicitation, or CETAS grants, fund tribal courts and tribal law enforcement, open to federally recognized tribes across Alaska. Applications are open until March 21st. Learn more at atjrc.org/CTAS. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tribal Justice Resource Center.
Skies across the state were brightened last night by a massive aurora borealis, and it's likely to be back again tonight. Alaskans flocked to social media, posting countless photos of a vibrant aurora that sent ribbons of color across the sky. Don Hampton at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute says his cameras recorded aurora activity from 7 last night through 6 this morning.
There was aurora in them all night long.
Hampton says he was struck by the sheer size of the aurora, visible overhead across much of the state, as far south as Sitka and Ketchikan. He says the aurora, driven by solar winds interacting with Earth's ionosphere, is on a rising trend toward a solar maximum, the peak of an 11-year cycle in auroral activity. Last night's display was also fueled by a coronal mass ejection of plasma from the sun.
And in this case, it happened to be aimed right at us, and it was big enough and strong enough that it created this really sort of special auroral display.
The intensity of the display resulted in latent red hues visible in the sky mixing with greens. Satellite data show 2 recent mass ejections from the sun, Hampton says. The first arrived yesterday. The next one is expected tonight. The Institute's aurora forecast today calls for highly active auroral displays over nearly all of Alaska, including South Central. We've posted dozens of photos from last night's aurora on our website, alaskapublic.org. Teenagers from across the state competed over the weekend in state cross-country skiing championships. Among more than 200 skiers were 2 athletes from Sleep Mute. KYUK's Emily Schwing caught up with them. Red.
This year's state high school cross-country skiing championships took place over 3 days at Kincaid Park in Anchorage. And there were more people in the stadium to cheer on the skiers than live in the tiny Kuskokwim River community of Sleep Mute.
Feels really different.
But that didn't faze 13-year-old Kylie Hayden.
We're not really used to strangers that much because everybody knows everybody at home. But then here, you don't really know anyone and they're just cheering for you.
Is it cool to have a bigger crowd cheer for you and ring all these bells?
Yeah, it's cool.
What do you like about it?
Makes you feel like you're known, even though you live in such a tiny place.
Hayden, a high school freshman, participated in both a 5-kilometer classic technique race and a 7.5-kilometer freestyle skate skiing race that included a mass start. She was joined by teammate and 8th grader Tamara Stern Morgan, who came along to learn.
So I could do it next year because I'm not in high school yet.
Okay, so what are you learning?
A lot of people are fast.
Most of the kids in Sleep Mute have been skiing on village trails since they were in preschool, thanks to support from the Alaska-based nonprofit Skiku, a program that works with school districts to get kids outside and on skis every winter. Angela Hayden is a teacher in Sleep Mute. She also coaches skiing in the village, and she's Kylie's mom.
And I heard that you didn't have to qualify for state, so I was like, wait, we can just jump in and do it. Because there's no competitions out in our area, no races, so the only place we could come would be here on the road system to race. Yeah.
Hayden says Sleep Mute tried to host its own race this year.
We tried last weekend, we did one, but we couldn't. The weather was bad, so we had to cancel all the other schools that were going to come.
She says Sleep Mute may reschedule that race.
Just inspire some kids, see if there are some other kids from other schools and that might be interested.
Sleep Mutes is the only team from off Alaska's road system to compete in state championships this year. Other teams came from as far south as Homer and as far north as Fairbanks to take part. In Anchorage, I'm Emily Schwing.
Not all the competitions at the Fur Rendezvous Festival in Anchorage speed along a racetrack. About 24 contestants tackled carving a solid block of snow that's 8 feet by 8 feet by 8 feet. There are 5 divisions in the competition: individual, family, schools, corporate, and 3-person teams. Colin Reedy has been taking part in the snow sculpture competition going on 7 years now. He's a teacher with the Adult Transition Program, which helps students ages 18 to 22 transition after high school. Reedy says there are usually about 12 students on the ACT team. They spend a whole week working, probably 5 or 6 hours a day.
So I always come up with the plan for our sculpture every year. I try to come up with something different. So we've done a water fountain 1 year. We've done a Fabergé egg. We've done a birdhouse, a log cabin, a giant teddy bear. So we're looking for simple things that we can handle.
Last year, the ACT students made a snow castle. This year, they turned their block of snow into a spaceship encircled with aliens. Not far from the ACT students, a teenage mutant ninja turtle emerged from the snow, spray-painted orange, green, and purple. It's the creation of the Partners Club, a Special Olympics Alaska group based in the schools. Mackenzie Peters, an 18-year-old vocational student, is a Partners Club volunteer. She says she's enjoyed her work with the students so much that it set her on a new career path as an educator.
I want to be a paraprofessional now after working with them. I've worked with them just a year and then this year, but it's just very much changed my perspective on what I want to do when I'm older.
The judging took place yesterday. Students from the Anchorage Waldorf School had the winning sculpture in the school category entitled The World Is in Our Hands. It features a pair of carved hands with the planet hovering above. That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's podcasts, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Wesley Early, Michael Finelli, Chris Clint, Emily Schwing, Jill Freitas in Anchorage, Tim Ellis in Delta, and Sabine Pooks in Kenai. Our audio engineer tonight is Chris Hyde. Annie Fight produced tonight's show. Filling in for Casey Grove, I'm Liz Ruskin. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips Alaska.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.